Hey there, welcome into hour two of the Bite Me Fishing Show. At the bottom of this hour, it's geared up and it's going to be a good one. Haven't heard from Uncle Carrie in a while. Carrie Marcus, he's going to be taking us in the Wayback Machine on lures. What still works, what it led to now. So Caleb had a little lower unit trouble, huh?
Yeah, nothing was there. And it was pretty cool because they opened this new gas station in Port A. And we're in there getting some gas. We walk in to get our own bottles a day away from the beer cooler in there. And I come walking out, and there's these two dudes standing there, and they got their hands on their hips just looking at it. And I go to talk to them. They're like, man, this boat is awesome, dude. And I was like, oh, yeah. And dude, I didn't even break stride. I said, you ever seen one of these new lower units? And they're like, what is it? I was like, I said, it's they call it Bluetooth. And they are looking at it. And I said, you see this intake right here? And Mercury has this little round silver thing that you unscrew to get the oil out. I said, it sucks the water in there. It's a high pickup. And out of that hole, and I pointed where the prop goes, I said, 450 horses of water comes out of that. And that dude's like, no kidding. I was like, man, yeah. I said, you know, I can't believe you haven't seen it. He's like, I haven't heard of it. I said, how have you not heard of this? And Daniel's sitting there, and the guy kind of talked like this. And Daniel would be like, and when I get talking, Daniel would be like, yeah, but, and the guy go, that's incredible. And like, I go like into further into it. And like, Daniel is trying to shut this down. Cause he told me like that dude, I thought that dude was about to say, you know, you think I'm stupid or something and start beating my ass. Right. But every time Daniel tried to shut it down, the guys start talking about how unbelievable it was. This went on for a while. But yeah, we were fishing
caused a lot of Google searches.
We were fishing this area, there was black tips all in it, and I think one bit the prop plumb off of it, because it was at this particular time it wasn't nothing I did. Okay, it just
nothing you did.
So the real story of it is that prop puts out so much torque, and whenever you're running in choppy waves and you can hear your prop barking, you hear wow wow wow. It's losing all of the resistance and then gaining it back every time it hits a wave, right? And Daniel and Chuck had ran that boat in West Matagorda for the Rojo Classic a couple weeks ago, and it was pretty choppy, and they ran it pretty hard. And then we did the same thing that morning for that one because of that storm that didn't infect anything, put two footers in Aransas Bay. And we get to where we're going, shut it down. We make one little drift, and I went to move back. I was like in 3 feet of water and went to move back around. It's heard bink. And I looked at Daniel, and Daniel looked at me, and we dropped trolling motor and just trolled in circles for 6 hours. We called Towboat US and told old Chris, like, hey, listen, man, I need you here at 2, and I need you back away in at 4. And he was like, hell yeah, dude, I'll bring the big boat. And he brought this big old beehole with twin motors on it. And as we were crossing Aransas Bay and 30-mile-an-hour winds, I looked at Daniel, and I said, man, next time, whether we're broke down or not, we're going to call and ride in this thing on the way back.
Yeah, it'll get you there quick.
Yeah, it'll get you there quick. But it pretty well wiped us out for team of the year. Obviously, we didn't get anything done in that tournament. And I took the boat. Ed over there at Clear Lake Power Sports does all of our work on the motors and lower units and everything. And we had just got a brand new lower unit warrantied. And I took it to Ed yesterday. And if anybody knows Ed, I asked one of the mechanics, I said, you ever told Ed a joke? And he laughed at it. And he goes, oh, yeah, once or twice. I said, well, you've been here about 10 years. And he goes, yeah, that sounds about right. So that's the kind of humor Ed has. And I come walking up with it, and he looks at me, and he looks at that, and he says, they ain't going to give you another one. Yes, sir, I understand. Hey, would you please fix this one, though?
You have worn out your warranty.
No. Oh, man. But the best, the little funny side note of it is every morning the way that tournament works is they'll do the national anthem, and old Brody says the prayer and everything, and then Ronald, all right, you know, boat one, go, you know, boat two, McCumber McCray, go. And day one, me and Daniel weighed in 1 6.5-pounder. That's all we'd do where we were at. And Chuck and Tony weighed in nothing. They broke their boat, didn't get back. And that night, it was a big talk about whether we were going to go out again or not, because obviously it can cost you about $8,000 if you go out just once. And we were having a pretty big talk whether it's even worth going out or not. And, you know, I didn't really care to go. Daniel wanted to go and give it the American effort. And Tony and Chuck, really, they weren't sure if they wanted to go either. And so next morning we get up, me and Daniel get in the truck, and we go to the harbor, launch our boat. We're sitting there, and national anthem comes, prayer comes, and all right, you know, boat, whatever, Chuck McKinney, Tony Gagliano, and we hear him go, here. And Ron turns around and looks behind him, and they're sitting under the pavilion eating tacos, watching all of us. And Ron said, you're supposed to be out there in your boat. They're like, oh, we'll go eventually. We're just going to eat tacos for a while.
So they were not exactly 100% serious.
That's you know, it's a different world in the pro level. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Dean was getting you a little riled up talking about your pretty prop.
Well, he kept talking about my fancy prop and everything, and I'm like, how do you know? None of us can even see the damn thing. It's not here.
It's Bluetooth.
Hey, it looked good out here in the driveway.
It's gonna scratch the bottom of your boat one day. It's in your front yard, bud.
I think it had something to do, and I'm going to get to another point on this. I'm not just chattering. It had something to do with tools or something that you happened on your boat that you had to fix, and if you didn't
it was a buddy of mine wrapped up line in his propeller, and we were talking
found it. So go ahead.
It could have been this. It could have been something else. But this I think it was one of them. It was about, like, back in the day, before boats and engines became these engineering works of art, that you always had a toolbox with you. You carried extra propellers. You carried stuff to deal with emergencies on the water, which really aren't that much of an issue anymore. You know, you count on everything to be dependable. Hey, and on that subject, so here's a good one. The day after you left, Carrie and I went out to the jetties. I think it was Monday, and I was going for some kingfish. It was a little rough. I was taking waves over the bow. I'm sitting there looking at the back of the boat, looking at the lines that were out, and Carrie starts telling me, hey, and I turn around and look, and there's smoke coming out of the troll motor, and not just a little bit of smoke. It was melting down. And
serious.
Yeah. The circuit breaker is right under the console. Why it didn't kick the breaker, I don't know. It's like a 50 amp little circuit breaker. So I reached down there, hit the button to turn it off. And it's a horrible design. So everybody should check your troll motor. There is where the wires were put together.
Government approved.
Yeah.
And this man's on a government retirement.
He is.
This was mandated by the government. So where the wires were spliced together, and they actually had, you know, waterproof, heat shrink type of tubing, but it had this encapsulated compartment that covered all of that up. But the capsule collected water. It held water like a cup. And so where those wires had rubbed together over time, they became exposed. And whenever the wave came in, filled up the little compartment that had cupped the wires together, the whole thing just started melting down.
That was Sunday. I came by Sunday morning. Remember, I went out and you were heat shrinking.
That's right. I was putting it back together.
What was the line thing in the prop? Because the reason I'm tying it all together is we had a question about tools. So I'm going to get to Caleb next about that. Because
if anybody has a lot of tools they need
on their boat, it's Caleb.
And as he was drifting along, he had some line out. He was spooling out some line. And as the boat was drifting, propellers spinning back there in the current. And it wrapped up all that line inside the prop. And, I mean, I've seen that happen before. You climb back there, spin the prop backwards, and sometimes you can unwind it. But his was so bad that he could not get the line out of the prop, ended up breaking it off, couldn't get what was in there, and ended up scrapping his whole trip and went home back to Austin for the weekend just because he didn't have what he needed to deal with it that day.
Yeah, and Caleb, we had a question about tools from 3 weeks ago, and I apologize. We're just getting to it now.
Could you imagine how many tools Caleb would need?
That's why I want to go to Caleb first.
A couple more units and propeller.
Yeah, but there is a lesson in this. Know your boat, first of all. Know where the breakers are for a situation like what Dean was talking about. Know you have the right tools, and it doesn't have to be a giant toolbox. And I'm just wondering, Caleb, like you, what do you have on yours? What would you recommend in terms of like, these are mandatory on your boat? So let's get right to that next, right here on the Bite Me Fishing Show. All right. Welcome back. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcast, but highly recommend Podbean or Sports Radio 610 because you can get every show we've ever done. So these days, what tools are you guys carrying?
Those dang Mercuries, they're near impossible to work on, but I keep the typical stuff, the screwdriver, the crescent wrench, a little socket set. The
impact wrench.
But the two main things that I do have with me all the time are Klein pliers and little small bolt cutters, crab traps wrapped around the prop, hooks in your hand, that kind of stuff. It turns out I'm an honorary member of Towboat US after this weekend. So
yeah, just now.
Yeah, I've made a post about it, and somebody's like, "You think Towboat US can drop someone?" I said, "They're not going to drop me. They're my title sponsor now."
frequent flyer miles.
Well, upgrade. So I haven't brought this part up yet. We're on the ride in, and I'm kind of talking back and forth with the captain there, and we're like an hour into the drive, and he goes, "So you doing the podcast this week?" And I was like, "Oh," and I looked at Daniel. I was like, "This is why I behave in public." And yeah. And so I'm sitting there, and the light bulb comes on. I'm like, "Well, if you listen to the podcast, you know about me pretty good, yeah." And he's like, "Oh yeah." I said, "Why doesn't my jersey say Towboat US across it real big?" And he goes, look around, he calls the owner, and he's like, "The owner's down, man." I was like, "Oh yeah, poster child." But
he got a lot of bang for his buck on right. That one.
Yeah. I learned that the mm-hmm. unlimited plan is probably the one for me. we were talking about different options. I just went ahead and went with the unlimited. But yeah, no, stuff to cut things is pretty well what I have on the boat.
you did have an impact wrench.
I had an impact wrench, and those jump boxes. We used to have one of those too. They got wet, and ow. Neither of them float.
Had to get wet.
Daniel forgot to tell me to put the plugs in the boat.
Good Lord,
Daniel, and. You know, I got this way of looking at things differently, and we get it.
Yeah, we know.
Understatement of the year.
We are very well aware.
We get it back on the trailer, and it comes out of the water, and it is just gushing out of the back of the boat.
All right, it's time. It's time for Geared Up. Kerry Marcus is going to join us, lovingly called Uncle Kerry, this segment. And I love that it's brought to us every week by Anglers Anonymous. It's a candy store. It's a candy store for us big kids right there in Katy. Great people. Love them. The best thing they do is listen. They listen to this podcast. They listen and answer all your questions if you have any. And they listen to what you want on the shelves. If you want it, Mike and Chris Butler and the whole gang have it. I can just about assure you of that. All right. So if you guys recall, about a week ago, we did a couple of segments on the boats that changed fishing as we know it. And we went all the way back to the old McKee crafts. We went back to all the boats, the evolution of them and all that. So I thought today would be a good time to talk about the baits, the B-A-I-T-S, the baits that have changed fishing as we know it. I'm currently standing, and as far as the eye can see, I can see baits, hard baits, plastic baits, soft baits, sinking baits, twitch baits, all of them. So going to chat with Kerry Marcus, who's been doing it a long, long time and certainly knows a thing or two about the baits that and the evolution of the baits. So, Kerry, we're going to dig deep, good, strong discussion about the baits that have changed fishing as we know it. But before we do that, I got to clear the air on something. And you'll know Kerry Marcus when you come into Fishing Tackle Unlimited here on the Gulf location. He's the really happy, cheery guy that's going to greet you with a big smile and say how you doing and all that other stuff. He's a really happy guy. But Kerry, I got to clear the air about something. About a year ago, maybe a little longer, you did a fishing tournament for old time's sake with one Captain Scott Null, and I believe another fella was on the trip. And there's a story going around. Banning Collins. That's right.
For Orvis rep in our part of the world.
That's right. It was Banning. I forgot about that.
I kind of got him a couple of jobs when I quit. Got him a couple of lines, and he's done well for himself.
He's done quite well. And the story goes, according to Scott, so I want to see if it jibes with what you're saying, that y'all weren't necessarily taking this fishing tournament too serious. And finally a redfish was caught, and you got down there and said, I can get this fish. I can take it. I can land a fish. I've landed thousands of fish. And all of a sudden that fish had an attitude. So what really happened? Did it slap you in the face three or four times?
Only three. It was every bit of maybe a 19 and a half inch redfish. If you were hungry, you couldn't have even kept it. And it was on, I had made Banning tie on a spoon fly, which to him and some other people, it ain't a fly. There's no fur, there's no feathers. Mm-hmm. It's just some epoxy and some mm-hmm. mylar. Mm-hmm. And it pissed him off. And about the, I don't know, 30 casts in, the water was, if you could have held the water still enough, mm-hmm. you could have plowed it and planted it. It was about halfway muddy, which is where Scott intended us to be the entire time of these 2 days of this tournament. He's up high on the polling platform. He's looking for mud.
Yeah.
Anyway, Banning finally hooked this one poor little fish. And we got it up to the boat. I knelt down on the boat. There's no point in Scott climbing down off the polling platform and mm-hmm. acting like a guide. I wouldn't. I mean, what if he failed at that as well?
That'd be a shame.
Yeah, it'd be embarrassing for him and you know, would provide long memory for me. At any rate, so I knelt down at the bottom of the boat and reached over and grabbed the leader. And tried to grab this fish behind the gills. Understand, remember, it was every bit of maybe 19 and a half inch fish. And it was in really warm water. And so the fish was kind of like about half cooked by the time he got him in, which was about 13 seconds after he hooked him. Uh-huh. The fish was tired. And all of a sudden, the fish decided to have attitude. And it splashed me, I don't know, four times maybe. Water, I mean, literally covered my face, down my shirt. I grabbed it, and it slipped out of my hands, and it slapped me in the face with his tail. At which point, I shook my head and grabbed the leader again. Uh-huh. And let him do exactly the same damn thing to me one more time. Except that time he slapped me right and left side. So that's three times this 19 and a half inch redfish is slapping the snot out of me.
Yeah.
I was fairly happy.
Yeah, fairly happy.
And, you know, water all over my sunglasses inside and out. Uh-huh. Could barely see anything. Uh-huh. My contacts were stinging. And I got the hook out and sort of threw the fish away from the boat. Is that the story you were asking
about? That's the story. And by the way, it checks out. That's exactly what Scott said. That's
yeah.
And you know, I wanted to bring that story up first because clearly it establishes just, you know, the high level of expert that you are.
Professional.
You're a professional. But let's get serious here. You heard me talking about, you know, all the boats that shaped fishing as we know it. I think there are a lot of lures that shape fishing as we know it, and we're going to go through the progression and look around us. I mean, there's, what, 7, 8, 9 aisles of baits here?
So let's do that next right here on Sports Radio 610. Back on the Bite Me Fishing Show, talking about the lures that shaped what we do.
Well, that's where I wanted to start. We were talking about it at one point during the show, and you said, do you remember the very first soft plastic or bait? And is that what you're talking about?
No, that's a different thing. That's a plug and shorty's a hard bait.
Yeah.
It's sort of shrimpy shaped.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were made in Corpus, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was literally 1959, 1960, because I am that old. I can sort of remember back that far. That actually predates, I think, the very first soft plastics, which were simply the front end and back end of some odd colored cream bass worms mm-hmm. that were done in colors that really had no place in bass fishing. I guess they had just experimented with colors. Yellow with painted black dots, which you now see nowadays on little beetle spins and things for crappie and such. There was a amberish color with yellow dots that was sort of see-through. There was red strawberry see-through with white dots mm-hmm. and with yellow dots. And these things, back in that day, in those days, the little quarter ounce, we probably didn't have, I know we didn't have 16th ounce jig heads.
Yeah.
We had maybe 8th ounce, but I know we had quarter ounce jig heads that had a strong enough hook to use for saltwater fishing. The there were no barbs. There were no tricky little twisty spring things. Mm-hmm. These things were held on by a small O-ring clamping up near the jig head itself.
That's crazy.
And I very distinctly remember, I don't know what year it was, but I was every bit of maybe 10. Mm-hmm. And we'd gone down to Port Aransas. We went once a year from down. I'm from Dallas originally. I know I'm a Yankee. And I had some, I don't know where I got these things. I must have bought them at Fisherman's Wharf in Port Aransas. I don't remember. But I had like this ambery see-through. And I'm on the Horace Caldwell Pier, the one close to the jetties, at night with all the old codgers there. And they're throwing silver spoons and they're throwing mirror lures, 52s, with the three hooks. And you know, 51s I don't think existed back then.
Yeah.
The shallow runners. Anyway, they were so pissed off at me because all these fairly decent trout were biting my little bitty lure that had absolutely no action in the water, none whatsoever. You just twist it a little bit and mm-hmm. it darted from side to side, kind of. But they weren't catching any fish in these lights on the mirror lures or the spoons. And I was essentially slaying them. Mm-hmm. I'm a 10, maybe an 11-year-old kid. I don't know.
Yeah.
I had no business showing them mm-hmm. their skirt that badly.
Yes. Yeah.
But that was one of the really earliest saltwater lures. Oh, that was the earliest saltwater soft plastics.
That's crazy because I remember the Boone Tout. That's the one that I really got going on. And that was just, it was hard and stiff. And
this was long before that.
Yeah. And that's why I wanted to talk to you because I know you had this knowledge. So what do you think? Let's start with plastics. I know that the mirror lures were already around, but let's start with the plastics. What do you think really kind of sparked the revolution or whatever you want to call it that we are in now?
What I just said.
That
it sparked it because it was a totally unactioned lure. Mm-hmm. Didn't have any wiggle to it whatsoever. There was no paddle tail. There was no ball tail.
Yeah.
There was nothing wiggling on that. There are a couple of lures out there now that are like that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely no action, but that's what sparked it. That's what sparked soft plastic. Mm-hmm. They started working and working really well.
Yeah.
And then other companies got into it, and I guess Cream, I don't remember them having paddle tails or something, but certainly all these companies started coming out. They just exploded.
Mm-hmm.
And it started sometime in the 60s.
Yeah.
Early 60s.
So as we're talking here, I'm thinking about some of these that we're talking about. You know, the Boone Touts. What are the other ones that you remember? Really, like that sparked it. But then there became more, like, I got to buy these, and they became more prevalent in regular tackle shops.
Remember names. The problem is that there's so many of them that have been around and out of business.
Yeah.
All these years later, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to remember names of ones that I haven't bought in.
Yeah.
40 years.
But nevertheless, I mean, as I mentioned, look around. It's crazy. Do you remember the first paddle tails or ball tails more recently, but paddle tails and some of the ways that the evolution has happened and really developed the plastic game?
Yeah, and it happened in the inshore white bass. If you live north of Waco, it's a sand bass.
Yeah.
If you say white bass to somebody from Dallas, they go, what?
Yeah, what?
But it was very prevalent. What are the ones? They're still around. I'm staring at them. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. Mr. Twister.
Oh, yeah.
Little shad paddle tails. Became huge.
Mm-hmm.
Saltwater, freshwater,
yeah.
White bass, stripers, largemouth when they're schooling in the summertime. Mm-hmm. And that they were certainly a big, big player in every market, every venue of fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Those
you think they were one of the first ones that really got everybody's attention?
I think so. Mm-hmm. That are still around.
Yeah,
we've got some things that we sell here that it seems to me they've been around since dirt was invented, and I never noticed them selling.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I got 14 empty holes over there for this one.
Yeah,
it's hoagies.
Yeah.
They've been around for
they've been around forever.
A long time.
Yeah.
And so much so that to me, that's like paint on the wall. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, I got holes in the paint. You know, I just don't notice them selling, but the people are fans of this old name. And they still sell, and so obviously they still catch fish.
Yeah, or else they wouldn't sell. Yeah,
they wouldn't be.
All right, so let's go through them. That's next, right here on the Bite Me Fishing Show. Welcome back. You mentioned how the lure boom hit in the early 60s, Kerry, joined by Kerry Marcus here.
What was that other one? It was called the Texas something or other.
Oh, boy.
Remember
Texas Twister?
The Texas Twister, something like that.
I think that was the name of a company, a Texas Twister.
Yeah, I remember
or something
those.
Like that.
I remember those as well. So as you're looking at these plastic...
You're talking to an 80-year-old. You want me to have a memory. Are you crazy?
You got a memory. You're doing well. Shoot. Keep it up. Keep it up, Kerry. All right. So as it develops, you know, 60s, 70s, obviously into the 80s is a boon. Into the early 2000s is another boon. And then COVID is a massive boon. You know, what have been the baits that were successful back then and you would still throw today?
There's a lure, Mirror Lures Little John, is hugely successful, and it is almost, it's a slightly larger version of that first Boone, cream lure, unmoving soft plastic. Mm-hmm. They don't have any action whatsoever in the water other than what you deliver with the twitch of your rod.
Yeah.
And they catch fish like crazy.
Yeah.
It's one of our very, very best-selling families of soft plastics. And there's no action to it whatsoever. So it dates
still catches fish.
Dates back to the absolute original soft plastics.
Whatever happened to the old, and this is another one that I started on, the old double drop, the trout rig?
Well, they're still around. Yeah. And there's still people that use them at the wrong time of year. I have a reason for saying that. Mm-hmm. There are people that have availability to, or they have a house with a light on the water behind it. And at least once a year, there will be a huge hatch of what people erroneously call shad. Mm-hmm. They're not shad. They're baby menhaden. But we call them shad, and they're tiny. And you throw a trout rig out there, a double, you know, a white and glow or whatever. But the small ones are, you can see my fingers, you can't see it on the radio. They're almost 2 inches long, jig head and nylon. They're almost 2 inches long. Well, hell, the fish that they're feeding on
is about
three-eighths or a half inch long. And they're mostly an eye.
Mm-hmm.
And if people will listen to me when they're in the store here and they tell me that, I'm throwing these trout rigs, and I ain't catching hardly anything. Well, it's because you're not matching the hatch.
Yeah.
Your lure is way too big. They make there's one company that makes a fly that is mostly an eye with some fuzzy shiny stuff on it, with a heavy wire hook that you can catch 30 and 9-inch redfish on it if that's what was there.
Yeah.
And you can rig that in a way for a spinning rod or maybe a casting rod that you'll catch every fish in your light.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, if it's a green light, most people know you catch catch one fish and go make a mint julep for a while.
Exactly.
Isn't that strange? On green lights, they just scatter to hell
all over the place.
And then they come back.
Yeah, yeah.
And then a white light up top, you just sit there and foam the water and have fish jumping and skittering all over the place. And the fish are still there. They stay there. I don't understand that at all. It doesn't make any sense.
All right, so let me ask you this.
I don't have any lures. I apologize.
Let me ask you this, because we're standing by all the lures here at Fishing Tackle Unlimited, so obviously we want people to come in here and get the stuff and see you and ask the questions and all that. But everybody comes along and says, well, this one is different, this one is new. How often does that really happen? How often does that really happen in terms of a real legitimate, okay, this is better?
In sort of season, that would be about now, this time of year, when people start seriously fishing for trout and redfish. It's once a week. There'll be somebody coming in asking for something new that I haven't even heard of or seen anything about it on the internet, although I'm not at my age, I feel it's unseemly for me to be on the internet too much. So I'm not there that much. Right.
But there are some that
they'll be the newest, latest, greatest, and by God, it works. Mm-hmm. That's what happened with Down South. Mm-hmm. That's my biggest selling brand name. Mm-hmm. And it was just, well, you got to try this several years ago.
Legitimately kind of changed the guy or got improved.
Yeah. It improved people's catch rate. Mm-hmm. The dadgum things work.
Yeah.
Whether it's the certain blend of the softness of them that makes them wiggle perfectly, right. I don't know.
Yeah.
But they sure sell and they sure catch fish, and even I've caught fish on them.
Even you?
Well, my girlfriend's name is Project, so that cuts way into my fishing time. And I tell a lot of people that in the store, hoping they'll be sympathetic and say, well, let me call you this Sunday. I'll take you fishing.
I'll take you fishing. No, not going to happen.
It never works. But
I say all this, and I'm as guilty as anything. I mean, fishermen are always looking for that little, and by the way, legitimately, I'm not even kidding, I am all on this Nomad, the soft plastics kick right now, because they're scented, they're good, the softness of the baits and all that. And I really think that that's one bait that has a legitimate chance to be something great.
There are all these shrimp out there like that Nomad shrimp that all they're missing is the heartbeat. They look like a shrimp.
Yeah.
And so I look at that askance going, oh, yeah, right, another one.
Mm-hmm.
And these dadgum things work.
They work.
They really do.
Yeah.
As long as you have any kind of water clarity where they can see the shape of the shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
These modern ones like the Nomads you're talking about, they're going to work. They really, really do.
Mm-hmm.
So those are new and, I don't know, revolutionary, even though there have been shrimp, exact shrimp imitations for years.
Yeah.
There's something in the formulations of the plastics now where the little legs actually wiggle lifelike in a way.
And the scent doesn't hurt.
And scent ain't hurting anything. Look at Gulp.
Yeah.
Talk about revolutionary.
That is one, isn't it?
One.
When did they start?
How?
Yeah, I mean, Gulp
I don't know. It's
about, you can't. I mean, all these tournament red fishermen lie about what they're catching. Using to catch fish, it's always going to be a gulp in there somewhere.
Well, it might be a spoon attached to the gulp. But, you know.
All right, so I don't want to keep you too long because I know you really want to get back to work. But
putting up Z-Man soft plastics. We just got a big shipment.
Oh, there you go. I do want to get to top waters. You mentioned the hard baits and the twitch baits, the Mirlure. Maybe we'll do that another time. But top waters, how often do you see it? I think it's much more difficult for a top water to change the game, isn't it?
It doesn't happen, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
The Mansfields now, they're so loud, that almost changes the game because they are so incredibly loud. And it can't be just because a lot of people are using them. That's why they catch fish.
Right.
There are many of them out there floating around on top of the water. Therefore, these trout come and hit it. No. There's something about the noise they make that must be
working,
appealing or maddening to the fish. I don't know which one. Yeah. I don't care which one works.
As long as it works.
They work.
Yeah.
And that's not an entire game changer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like take a spook one knocker and knock it up to several decibels.
Yeah,
it's just amazing how these things sell and people just rave about them.
Mm-hmm.
And plus the fact that I think the people that designed the colors for those Mansfield knocker things, I think smoked some slightly illegal stuff because they have a lot of fun with the colors.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't just look like a mullet or pink.
Yeah, but
they've got all these funny-looking colors that I think are really cool.
Yeah. Do you remember when topwaters really started taking over?
Well, yeah. Way back, there's a semi-topwater, the Broken Back Redfin.
Yep, that's the one Scott was talking about.
That's not allowed, but it's a topwater. It makes a wake.
Yeah.
And that was the, that and, well, there was a Boone, many years ago, there was a Boone needlefish that they used in South Texas.
Mm-hmm.
It was fully 16 inches long.
Damn.
It was cedar, painted like a needlefish, green with eyes on it and everything, with two sets of treble hooks on it. But I have no idea how, you know, when a big trout hits something and they do their tarpon imitation.
Yeah, yeah.
My first one, through a Mirlure, I saw it in its mouth all three hooks. It was sideways in its mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And it was probably a 28, 29-inch trout.
Mm-hmm.
And it threw the damn lure 30 feet that way.
Damn.
It's impossible with three sets of trebles. Three sets of trebles.
Well, you made it possible.
How this big boon,
yeah.
this needlefish, which mm-hmm. was stiff as hell,
yeah.
how that was one of the big baits
yeah.
down in Baffin Bay
yeah.
many, 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 many years ago. They haven't probably made that lure forever.
Yeah.
But that was that predated the broken-back redfin mm-hmm. by some years,
mm-hmm.
but that was a big topwater bait back then. You skittered it across the top of the water.
Yeah. So you think the broken back kind of started the real push?
The real push for topwaters.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of this stuff is Baffin driven.
Yeah.
You know, what mm-hmm. what is successful
down there
for big, really, truly big fish,
mm-hmm.
you know, say 26 and above.
Yeah.
I'm so old, I've caught some big fish. I've just used up a lot of bad luck.
That's right.
But people don't... maybe some youngsters that have had the ability to fish some of the best places
mm-hmm.
just because of, you know, financial ability to
yeah.
do so,
yeah.
thanks to Dad. They don't realize how a 26-inch fish, you need to be pretty damn proud of that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right.
And
everybody
going,
has these.
And going north of there, you know, because they've been to these places and they've caught some 28s and 29s. Maybe they've caught a 30.
Yeah.
Just because they were able to be at that place.
At that time.
But trout are not very big.
No, they did. And really catch, you're right, though, and more people need to realize that. 26, 27, that's a big
bad go trout.
All right, so last thing here with Kerry Marcus here at Fishing Tackle Unlimited. Let's go back. You started fishing avidly, I should say, late 50s, early 60s?
Oh, heck, yeah. 46, born in 46, 7 years old.
Okay, so mid-50s. So sure. You started fishing in the mid-50s.
Yeah.
Go back the entirety of your life fishing with artificial baits. Any era, any decade, if you could just pick any bait from any time, pick three. You're going out fishing tomorrow for trout and redfish, and you can throw this one, and this one. What three baits all time would you put in your bag?
Gold spoon, quarter or half ounce would be one. I'm tempted to say that broken back redfin, but it would be Super Spook Junior.
Mm-hmm.
I hate bone. Hate it.
You hate bone?
But I'll fish a bone silver.
Oh, okay.
A bone is too friggin' plain and ugly. It's not going in my box. But a bone silver, yep.
I like I call it the red-headed stranger, the white with the red head.
That's too old-fashioned even for me.
That's all I throw right now.
I was just rearranging them today, literally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I put a whole bunch of them up top because they're great lures.
Yeah.
And I don't see the red-headed stranger being sold anymore. Or not.
Well, I'm
just
here.
Don't notice it. But I'm sure it sells pretty well, but nothing like a mm-hmm. bone or a bone.
Yeah, bone is very popular. And what's your third one? So the gold spoon, bone? Maybe a plastic?
It's going to be a plastic.
Yeah.
I don't know which one to pick.
How are you on corkies?
I hate fishing them. I like fishing faster than a corky likes to fish.
Yeah.
Every time I fish a corky, I catch fish.
Yeah.
However, I've got 18 colors of corkies.
Mm-hmm.
Only three of them have tooth marks on them.
What color?
I'll probably never use those other
ones.
Oh,
I see what you're saying. I thought it was your favorite three colors or something.
No. Well,
so what plastic?
The soft plastic. I don't know. It might be a down south just because it's so popular for us.
Mm-hmm.
I like Bass Assassins a lot,
mm-hmm.
or Saltwater Assassins, whatever you want to call them. I like Kelly Wigglers.
Mm-hmm.
I like Norton's. I don't have
a
I've got kind of a box of each
mm-hmm.
family.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say a down south in a chicken on a chain type color.
That's the one.
Do you people know? Do you know where that name comes from?
Did somebody told me once?
It's the name of a rather famous Brahma bull.
That's
for the rodeo.
Yeah.
Now here's the other startling thing.
Mm-hmm.
How the hell do you name a Brahma bull chicken on a chain?
Chicken on a chain.
Where does that come from? Where in the world does that come from?
I don't know. It works, and it turned into a great lure.